Good day. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail with Mark Amaru Pinkham. This program will explore the secrets behind the Knights Templar and other secret mysteries of the world today. Now here's your host, Mark Amaru Pinkham.
Good day, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Guardians of the Holy Grail, the program dedicated to diving deep to uncover and expose the truth behind the Knights Templar, the Holy Grail, the secret societies, and many of the world's occult and esoteric mysteries. Now, this program, the Guardians of the Holy Grail, was created by me specifically to set the record straight with hard facts from authors, researchers, and those with direct knowledge and experience of the mysteries. I myself am an author, researcher, and a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars. My Gnostic Templar Order is dedicated to reviving and unveiling the true history and rites of the Knights Templar, as well as the mysteries of those ancient knights who were the real Jedi Knights and Masters of the Force. Yes, they did exist. Now, at our Gnostic Templar website, which is www.gnostictemplar.org, if you go there, you can sign our mailing list and receive our monthly e-newsletter and keep up to date with what we're doing. You can also become an associate member, and if you feel inclined to become a full member, you can even download an application and fill it out and send it back in. And we have many books on sale and correspondence courses and live videos and all kinds of stuff going on there. So please come visit us. Now, we have a very special guest today, but before I introduce him, I would first like to tell you about an event that our Templar Order is sponsoring. As many of you might know, one of our goals within the International Order of Gnostic Templars is to complete the work of the original Templars, which was to create a one-world spirituality. Now, with this goal in mind, we and the IOGT have been organizing an event to take place December 19th through 21st of this year in Sedona, which we're calling Birthing the Fifth World. Now, the Fifth World, as most of you know, is the Native American name for the coming new era, the Golden Age, that begins on December 21st. Our Birthing the Fifth World event will take place over 3 days, during which numerous speakers will give presentations about the Fifth World, including the new Fifth World spirituality, the new Fifth World civilization. And we're also going to have many purification rites being offered, including Native American sweat lodges, sacred dances, vortex meditations, and a Vedic fire ceremony. Now, these purification rites are designed to help prepare all the people that will be involved with our event for the most important day of the event, which is December 21st. This is when it is said that the Earth is going to be in its most perfect alignment with the center of the Milky Way galaxy, the most perfect alignment it's been in for the last 26,000 years. At sunrise on that day of the 21st, we will station ourselves at the vortexes of Sedona and receive the new frequencies that will support the manifestation of the Fifth World on Earth. And it's important to be in a high-energy area like Sedona at that time for numerous reasons, one of which is because the high frequencies or the natural high frequencies of Sedona will amplify those frequencies that are coming to us from the cosmos. And you're bound to get the most benefit from those frequencies, too. Now, during the day of the 21st, to begin our new cycle, and we're all going to start a new cycle in our lives, our own lives at that time, we're offering initiation from two orders. We're going to have a Taoist master who will administer initiations into Taoism. And we're going to have some Uzedi priests. We're hoping to get a couple, actually all the way from Iraq. And they're going to oversee initiations into the most ancient order of the Peacock Angel. And this will be the first time, I guess first time ever, that these mysteries of the Peacock Angel will then be taught here in the West. And in the afternoon of the 21st, we will all regather together, and we will then form together the Tribe of All Nations, or what I'm calling, or what we will call, Earth Tribe. Now, during this event, on the 21st, we are expecting, and I've had visions of this, that there will be a resurrection and revival of the ancient Hopi city that Sedona is built upon, which is known as Palakwepi, the Red House. Now, we believe that many people that come to our event will be able to see and interact with this ancient city, which is mostly on the fourth dimension. I've been seeing it myself for the last 25 years, and I certainly welcome the possibility of other people being able to enjoy this with me, other people that I'll be able to share this experience with for the first time. Now, if you'd like to become part of our event and register and find out exactly what the schedule is going to be, please go to our website, which is www.2012sedona.com. And so you can register there and pay for the event. And I think all the information you need is right there. So I'm hoping to hear from you all about this and see you here in Sedona on December 21st. So now I would like to introduce today's guest. Jim Shannon is our guest. Jim was introduced to me by a friend who is an ex-member of the Armed Forces and a Templar Knight. We spent an afternoon together here in Sedona not too long ago. And during that time, I told my friend about our recently created Jedi Templar Corps program in the IOGT and how we are dedicated to reviving what we consider to be the true knighted tradition that existed hundreds and thousands of years ago when knights truly were masters of the Force, when they truly were Jedi Knights. So when I told my friend that our goal is to essentially produce modern-day Jedi Knights, he told me about Jim Shannon and suggested I get in touch with him. He told me that Jim had a similar plan as ours to produce Jedi Knights way back in the 1970s when he was a lieutenant colonel in the Army. My friend told me that Jim's story was the theme of the Hollywood movie that I'm sure many of you have seen called The Men Who Stare at Goats. Now, I've seen that movie, but when I saw it, I decided at the time that it must be mostly fiction. Well, as it turns out, a lot of it is, but there's a good part of it that is true and is based on the actual creation of what's called the First Earth Battalion of Jedi Knights that was created by Jim. Well, the next day I contacted Jim, and since that time we've had many long Skype conversations about his First Earth Battalion and what's happened to it since he retired from the Army. He's still overseeing it, and the First Earth Battalion is mainly dedicated to environmental projects to help save our Mother Earth, although it is also dedicated to the creation of these Jedi Knights, or what Jim calls paranormal soldiers. You can find out more about this First Earth Battalion and what its current projects are by visiting this website, which is www.firstearthbattalion.org. So welcome, Jim. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail.
Aloha, Mark. I come to you today from my little botanical oasis here where 14 dedicated people are about the forest, harvesting food and living about 20 years in the future. And the sun's up and it's quiet for a change. So
you're in Hawaii. Well, I envy you for being there, that's for sure.
Well, you should envy my choice making. Because it was a choice. Yeah.
Well, I still love Sedona more than any place else, but I do envy you.
Well, we have an outpost in Sedona manned by Keith Kavisic and Michael Sky. So you might run into them someday.
Yes, I should definitely contact them. Yeah, we talked about this. I just haven't gotten around to it. But yeah, that's something at the top of my list. Well, Jim, to start our interview, for those people that haven't seen the movie, The Men Who Stare at Goats, perhaps you can give a little history about your attempt to create this battalion of Jedi Knights or paranormal soldiers. How did it all begin and how did it go? What happened with that?
Okay, well, there was a time in the Army when I had a job in Los Angeles, and I was very interested in seeing all of the changes going on. It was as if America lifted the window on the rest of the world, and actually some deep history of Asia and whatnot became fascinated with Qi and many of the martial arts as well as Taoism, and it provoked me to start to assemble notes on what I call high performance at that time. And then the Army asked me to be part of a think tank at the Army War College called Task Force Delta. And I was one of the first 9 people selected, mostly because I was normally out of the box. And they needed some out-of-the-box scouting. And as I went back and forth to this think tank, it became very obvious to me that being in California, I had a way of seeing a whole series of human performance skills and modes and belief systems that were worth cherry picking for just the very best in the new warrior archetype. And one of the words that struck me at the beginning was the warrior monk. A phrase. I don't know who originally came up with that, but Oscar Ichazo of the Eureka Movement was one who made it clear to his people. And I thought, there's a hybrid that includes patience and devotion in the monk and the full robust warrior in the soldier. And knowing the world was deeply in need of some peace and needed to pay attention to its natural environment, I decided to couch all the human performance stuff. And human performance stuff, I mean breathing tools and listening tools and things that Olympic athletes use, like pre-visualization. But that long list of stuff is fairly dry, presented, you know, as a, you know, what we had then were slideshows, but the same thing as PowerPoint. So I said, I'll just couch this in a mythological organization that has a cultural feel to it, much like the Knights Templar have this great long tradition of history. It's and populated, you know, handily with heraldry. I said, I'm just going to have to make this heraldry up. So lo and behold, I had a chance to not just tell the think tank about this. I initiated them in the officers' club one evening, you know, using the lights off, a candle, some fake flowers, and a circle, and told them the story of this mythical unit as if it were in being. So I'm a proto-mythologist, and what I do is I write stories about the future that we want. So I play with the concepts rather arbitrarily, unlike many mystical traditions that were actually born out of somebody, you know, flying in on a light ball or something more real. No, this was a calculated creation of a culture transmitted under the name of the 1st Earth Battalion. And I had no idea of the potency of this until they called me into the room the next morning after the initiation, stood the room to attention, and the director, Colonel Mike Malone, read me the orders, making me the commander, albeit mythical commander of a mythical unit, making me the commander of the 1st Earth Battalion, and gave me official-looking military orders to that effect. Well, they've never sent me to a new post, so I'm still doing that job 30 years later. And I then encapsulated those ideas into 125 pages called the Evolutionary Tactics, which is the manual that the Army then printed from the War College and sent to its most promising young officers. So there goes the mythology, you know, from a War College presentation to a cartoonized mythical handbook, now available, by the way, at neweartharmy.com. And why, everybody in the Army who had a little sense of the possible began applying these ideas, and some of them created remote viewing. And remote viewing was the trigger for Hollywood to say, oh, this is spooky enough and fun enough for us to get into. So young Johnny Ronson from England, who worked partly for the BBC, had written a short encapsulated version of this thing called Men Who Stare at Goats, and the BBC gave it to another great screenwriter, and pretty soon, I would say, very faithfully, they looked at, say, 50 or 60 of the things that were tried out in the Army as a result of this creative campaign. And then, of course, they made half of them Hollywood pratfalls and half of them sight gags or whatever. And what came out was, and I have to say this in retrospect, thankfully, was light-hearted, because if it had come out with a drum roll, why, we would have been hung for witches or something. So people were able to, in that movie, swallow these new possibilities for human beings in a, you know, in a lively, fun format. If you want to know what I thought, you can watch the movie in a DVD and click on the part, The Real Men Who Stare at Goats, and you'll see myself and some of my contemporaries talking about our mission. You'll also see the Earth Prayer, which is something I wrote that gives you a sense of my spirituality and the direct relationship I have with the Earth Mother. Now, I've talked a long time, so what would you like?
Let me ask you this, Jim. Did you personally get involved with any of the training of what would be the paranormal soldier?
Oh, yes, but much more in the combat side of it. I had a rifle platoon in Vietnam for 319 days did that crazy thing called search and destroy, which means you basically walk into bad guy country in the forest and try and find people collected there in small villages or hiding in some way and take their resources away from them, which means if you get in a fight, of course, you have to shoot back. But that was patently one of the dumbest tactical maneuvers anybody could ever imagine, unless you had infantrymen to spare like cattle fodder. So what happened in that year is I discovered in my platoon members a lot of paranormal skills. Now, I didn't have any name for them back in those days, but I was absolutely convinced that the human organism, under the pressure of needing to know what's out there in front of them, can expand itself in many ways into the matrix, into the biosphere, and collect information of a variety of kinds. So I was basically learning things that old Western scouts probably knew about and great hunters knew about, you know. So the extension of all the senses was the way I described it. And then the more psychic elements of it were sort of picked up by, you know, very ardent Army investigators as they looked into all the ways they might know something at a distance. I mean, think what a shift in your military operations if you actually know what's going on in the enemy's headquarters, or if you can see his biggest submarine being built. So it was a no-brainer for the Army to launch into that side of the paranormal, that is the remote viewing. And psychic projection was the thing that happened in the so-called GOATS experience. Nobody has ever verified that to me. But the point is not badly taken, because if I could go into an enemy village at some distance and put everybody to sleep, that would be a great way to get inside and then make friends. You know, it's that walking into the trap that usually causes the firefight, which usually means some of the good guys on both sides get killed. Not a good thing to have. And we're facing that problem today, of course, in the Middle East. And we've chosen to do that again. So there it is. There's real basic tools that have been used for centuries. Then there are some paranormal tools that are reaching into the future and into the unknown. And I think they all have the possibility of attaching to some spiritual connection as well. I don't know where all the words I use come from. When I go on stage or even in this radio interview, I'm signed up to also report what comes through. Now, when somebody calls me a channel, that puts me in the, you know, California voodoo department, and I'm sorry, we all channel. If you don't know that, just videotape yourself sometime and see how many things you said you didn't know you said. I don't know. Does that help?
Well, let me ask you this, Jim. Your vision of, you know, the paranormal soldier, was it influenced by the image of the Jedi Knight? I know that when you were doing your work of creating this First Earth Battalion originally, this was the time when the Star Wars was popular. So did that really influence your thinking too much? There's a lot of talk about Jedi Knight in the movie. And so was that really an influence on you?
Well, I thought those were powerful mythologies, and they certainly referred to something called the Force, which everybody was tuned up for. But the words that came out of my mouth were warrior monk at that time. And only later did the Jedi assign the popular acceptance of what I was doing sometimes was called related to Jedi work. And who was the guy that did the Star Wars?
George Lucas. Right?
George Lucas has been looking for results from that movie actively to see what impact the words Jedi Knight and the movie had on people. And I don't think he's been too successful, but that's just an aside. But I would say overly influenced by that, no, but naturally. I look at movies like that and I go, this is likely to be something like we're going to see, better than any, quote, scientist or futurist can tell us. Furthermore, we don't need to go into the future with more glass and metal and steel. We need to cherry pick the past first and organize a future that we can live with. And it needs to include nature and the feminine presence and a lot of things that were sort of pushed out of the way during World War I and World War II and other wars and other recent mythologies. I asked myself, you know, I suspect the first concept of warrior came from the women in the tribe who said, you can't let those marauders come in and steal our babies and our chicken anymore. And so the warrior was sort of born. But that was a warrior who contemplated conflict and death, as well as being a strong man, an honorable strong man. And right now we need a mythology that lets our honorable strong men have a better thing to do with their time, like put the biosphere back together, have forests that are dripping with intelligent breeds of fruit and flowers and animals, and live in nature where the air is fresh and the food's fresh. And not everybody needs to do that, but that is a grand move for the people of Earth to make, and I think they're ready to make it.
Well, one thing I want to mention, and this is what we've talked about, this idea of the Jedi Knight actually is based on actual history. There actually were, they weren't called Jedi, but they were called Jedi in Egypt, Jedi right. Warriors, which is spelled Jedhi. And this idea of the Jedi Knights, apparently Lucas originally got it or adopted it from Edgar Rice Burroughs, the author of the Tarzan
right.
series. And he, in his books, he talked about the Jed Warriors.
Hmm.
And then so Lucas picked it up, and then the first name of the Jedi Knights that he used for Star Wars, or was going to use, was Jedi Templars. interesting enough, since and then later on it became Jedi Knights. But I think that not only was Lucas influenced by Edgar Rice Burroughs, he must have been also influenced a lot by the old Jedi or Jedi warriors of Egypt. Because if you think about it, it seems like at least half or two-thirds of every scene in Star Wars was in the desert.
Which is, of course, cheaper to rent as movie space.
Yeah, right. Well,
and night shots.
I'm sure that was part of it as well, yeah. This is what we're planning to do, as I've told you, within the IOGT, in our Jedi Templar Corps, which isn't Jedi Templar, but Jedi. Our goal is to revive the original Jedi knights from Egypt, who were really, they were really masters of the Force, and had these kind of supernatural abilities of telepathy or remote viewing and all the rest of it. And so, I mean, within our training, there's going to be a lot of actual references to Egypt and the Egyptian spiritual tradition. But anyway, I thought that I would just interject that this, the Jedi Knight of Lucas, it's actually based on an actual tradition that goes back many thousands of years into Egypt. But you were talking about the first Earth Battalion, I think, and what they're doing now in terms of wanting to heal Mother Earth, to be the steward of Mother Earth, and to be peacekeepers around the planet, right?
Well, as a minimum, and become land crafters, and the far range of things. But I'd like to say that my reading of George Lucas was that he used the formula for the hero's journey as a primary model for his mythology. And that came from Joseph Campbell's study of all the religions of the world and major movements, all of which had as a necessary piece this invitation to squeeze through the channel and through the challenge to become the victor. And so the light and dark all of a sudden of planet Earth makes a lot more sense. You know, some people say if you didn't have the dark side, the light side would fall down in their own feces. You know, that the prick and the poke of the challenge is a big deal. Now, here we live in a time when the speed given to us by the industrial age has us in a kind of industrial angst, performance angst, deadline, need to have an objective, need to have a single skill set, need to accomplish X, Y, and Z. We are not good candidates for jetty, extra-dimensional skills. You have to have some temple activity, and I think most people in the martial arts, combine meditation with active practice physically. And I would say I've encouraged the paranormal or the use of energy, per se, an Eastern concept, with the use of cunning, which is a Western concept for soldier archetypes. Now, providing a soldier archetype is only one of the kinds of mythologies I write about. And the others include, the New Earth Army, which is to repair the biosphere, stories about the actual military that I know that is already trained in looking at the biosphere as a planning objective, and various other smaller. I had a hand in Captain Planet, which was a combination not only of five continental archetypes, five entities from around the planet, but the kids couldn't be powerful unless they worked together, was one of the notions, and that the power of heart was right there in the center of the other active elements, earth, air, fire, and water. So this notion that the spiritual side, the mystery side, the numinous side, is in us. Like it or not, we are crawling our way out of our understanding of who we are. And by the way, always leaning mystically at the same time. I think the army officers I knew were ennobled by the thought that they might be warrior monks, besides just being what we call war fighters. And war fighters kill people and break things. Warrior monks execute the Marshall Plan, which was, of course, first done by the American Army in World War II and after World War II, and rehabilitated most of Europe. So we actually have a tradition of working in the Yosemite forests and whatnot in the Army, the American Army. And I think it's a great time to reactivate that. And it's nothing. There's nothing like having the largest force that exercises political will by damage, which is what we have now, to have that force with all of its computers, communication skills, maps, vehicles, and whatnot, take on the big job of the planet. And the group of generals I worked with, 13 of them are from different nations. And all branches, Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marine. See, the Marines can take care of the coastline. A coastline is a big deal with our coral reefs that are going away and inland waterways that touch into the inland part. And they have the amphibious vehicles to do that. The Navy has the patrolling skills to monitor the gyre where all that plastic is happily being collected for us by nature, thank you, ocean, and have that converted. And it's great to control over fishing, and the Air Force can see things from the air that nobody can see or scan with sensors and report on pollution. Nobody can buy off the reports. They're going to go on TV for the public to see. And the Army is, so skilled to make intelligent forests with thoughtful watersheds and small encampments for our young people to start moving in that direction. Most of the young kids right now just getting out of college that can't get work are forming themselves into the country. Some are taking over small towns in a way, or old farms. Some are simply going straight into the bush. And they're all sort of empowered by the festival culture. If you want to know if the American Indians are going to have an effect on our future, just go to a festival of young people and not so young people. Burning Man's a great example of what happens to electrical engineers when they're tired of building bridges, or mechanical engineers, I should say. And the speed at which we're going now, Mark, means we have to lay the breadcrumbs quickly and in the right direction, or we're going to run over ourselves, so to speak.
I wanted to ask you, Jim, reading through your manual, it seemed like the 1st Earth Battalion would be best as a civilian organization. Obviously, it didn't catch on, hasn't caught on so well within the armed forces or the U.S. armed forces. And I know in your manual you talked about being an international organization, not nationalistic, but international. And maybe that's going to work best as a civilian organization. What do you think about that?
Well, my idea is to give the next world to as many people as possible. I turned down an offer to create an actual Earth Battalion because the material I had collected was mostly designed to motivate people to an entire way to see things. And as a result of not creating a specific organization, I didn't give the system a chance to measure it against the old world and find it failing and close it down. Just like George Lucas made 3 to 5, 7 films, I guess it was. The films are doing the work for everyone on the planet as they exist. And the embedded mythological ideas are completely available to everyone and getting there, and did get there. So it's the story that's going to win the day here, and not a bunch of pioneers off at the edge of the woods trying to do something for real. There are 7 adaptations to the Earth Battalion already written by other people. So it is basically an account of how we can be as human beings. That is the work, and what I continue to do. I am about to open a cyberversity with over 100 videos on how to bring the Earth back to a beautiful paradise. We really don't have an alternative but to aim straight at paradise. If we try to appease all the industrial age powers of the last century, we're never going to make it. We need to remember that what they did, though, they connected the planet with, boats and planes and bridges and telecommunications and finally the web, which I'm happy to say was invented by the organization Task Force Delta. At least we used it as social networking before anyone else did, as a rule. And so what I love about your organization is it knows the potency of heraldry. It knows what a costume means when you're praying. It knows what a name like a knight will do to somebody's psyche. The Army knows that if you look at the uniform of the average soldier, you will see on his chest that he wears, as he carries around, an entire documented history of his accomplishments, which, guess what? Then he is impelled to continue. Do you get that idea?
Well, certainly the idea that I've gotten is that there's so many people out there, especially males, that would like to dedicate themselves to a path, like a knighted path or a Templar path or the path of a spiritual warrior. And, they don't want to join the Army necessarily, but they would like to learn what is taught in the Army. They would like to learn, for example, martial arts or hand-to-hand combat or survival skills. And so they wonder, so many of them are searching for some organization or some program in the world where they can do that. And they would also like to, learn the spiritual the spiritual warrior pass to go along with martial arts and learning about weaponry and this sort of thing. And of course, this is why we have decided to implement this Jedi Templar Corps for people like them, but also for people that have left the military.
Right.
And they have this skill set, this amazing skill set, and they have no way to use it. And they're still warriors at heart, but they have no outlet for that. Right.
Yes.
And this could be an excellent next step for them. Besides that, I think that so many of the people out there today, they are thinking more in terms of one world or being planetary citizens, and if they are going to be the soldiers or the knights of anything, they want it to be the whole world and not just one country.
Right.
So everyone's thinking more globally now. And
yes.
So it's a perfect time for what you've got here, the 1st Earth Battalion, to really take off in a very big way. So I hope you have a plan of how, a plan of organization of how how you can, create maybe branches of it all over the planet now.
Well, the mission for me, since nobody else was doing it, was to go from... If I can convince an army to move into an environmental role that is honoring and, produces grand results, how many other large organizations on the planet are available to make the shift too? So my project or Mission Paradise, which is the current biggest video I have on YouTube, includes all of the people. I think probably 70 to 75% of the people on the planet here are not really at an office all day long or a factory. And those people can start to make the move toward rediscovering the planet as a botanical oasis. And I'm on that case now. I know the military is already seated with at least 230 generals that already know how to make the move toward the biosphere as soon as the political department, is either so stupid they need to be moved over to the side, or they actually recognize that there is only one chance now is to take care of the place where we live or we won't have one. And I've made that move, and I am confident that people that are carrying the field manual around right now are giving it to as many people as I could ever hope if I were sitting here in the mail out department. But what I'm doing on my land with 3 acres is pioneering the next agriculture, which is a forest that grows food and people and supplies and tools. And I think that social experiment is as important as shifting a military archetype to a military spiritual archetype. So, hey, I don't have enough hours in the day, buddy.
And I'm sure.
And I have made a choice to disseminate story as opposed to supervise a new organization.
Well, the kind of vision I've been having and the way that that we can come together as a Jedi Templar Corps and your 1st Earth Battalion is some of the projects that I've foreseen that are envisioned. It's like going into Iraq as an example, and I've been championing the cause of the Zetis for some time. Very malign people in northern Iraq that have been getting murdered right and left by terrorist Muslims for quite a while. To be able to go in and help these people with their lives, with their communities, and so forth. But in order to do that, and to go on a diplomatic mission such as a helping mission, it's going to require having a certain set of skills, martial arts and weaponry and so forth, to do that. And so this is how I see that, you know, we can combine perhaps, you know, our two missions. I mean, I already see the Jedi Temple Corps as an ally to, you know, the 1st Earth Battalion and maybe even, you know, a branch of it. But I can see how, I can see the value of these, the Jedi Templar course training and skills that we would, will be teaching in conjunction with the 1st Earth Battalion.
Yes, and I hope that if you do, you can take from the manual I did whatever you need to give your knights, wherever they may live and not have a chance to go to a class or school anywhere, and let them seek their education, understanding the higher purpose behind it. When I say that people have been influenced by the manual I've written, I'm talking about people who last year in Afghanistan gave 14 million cell phones to Afghani people and put the tower up so they could all talk to each other and not be controlled by the mullahs.
Mm-hmm.
Same people brought in the a rocket stove, which allows the people in Afghanistan to cook food at 8 times the efficiency of firewood that they used in their normal clay ovens. So it's infectious, this noble call. You just look at our recent elections and you see how plastic it is. And what it is a front for all these organizations in the last century who, by the way, created villages and factories to help us out, and they're stuck on big. And if we don't turn them down, they're going to not make the small things that we need and keep paying the politicians what they need to keep the old way in place. And happily, the web has already produced a democratic tool far better than government, at least 10 times the capacity of government to give local people a chance to meet each other, trade things, build their own local economies, etc. And there's just the peoples who are in charge of the world and nations are not going to be the first ones to admit that we are actually a global, culturally unified planet and have been for 30 years because we pass around everything from country to country and ethnic group to ethnic group. There is food, costumes, clothing, music, instruments, equipment. You know, we are a global trading entity at the moment. But who's ordained to stand up and say we are one planet? We have the web as our democratic mechanism. Help make it better, and drop the borders. Cut out all this self-interested hegemony. You know, I don't even know if I use that word right. We really, as fast as we're going, we are blind to the fact that we're already a connected, unified world. We're blind to the fact that the web is the democratic instrument of choice. It's not representative governments. They never made it. And there are a number of those other realities that we just haven't had long enough time to soak in. So mythology is going to move faster than organization. And I offered you an alliance with us, and it's mostly at an R&D level, at a how do we make our groups work better, how do we get the right word out, how do we actually prepare a transition for the warrior ethic from breaking things and killing people to repairing the world artistically in the most noble fashion. Making the kind of heroes out of men and women now who love to work outdoors, roll up their sleeves, work in teams, you know, all that good stuff it takes to make things happen. So I'm happy for our alliance. I'm very happy you asked me to participate in this public discussion. And I know we have some time left, but I wanted to get that in so we didn't have to rush at the end.
Well, we're all very excited too. Certainly everybody that I've talked to in our organization is very, very excited about aligning with you because, that's what we're all about. I mean, And service is such an important part of our organization. And we also haven't been envisioning how we could serve the entire world and what vehicles to use for that. And certainly yours is an excellent one. How to be diplomats, how to spread diplomacy in order to help create peace amongst the different nations. So we do have a global consciousness and a global civilization. In fact, we've even been talking about the coming fifth world as a time when exopolitics, diplomacy amongst intelligent life forms in the universe is going to be important, and to train our knights to somehow be able to communicate with higher life forms, higher intelligent life forms when they start appearing.
You know, hello.
We'll be coming. Yeah, well, which yeah. is happening, but, you know, well, that is going to be happening a lot more often.
They're not exactly appearing, but they're certainly speaking through an awful lot of people that I know.
That's for sure. That's for sure, yeah. So I think that it's going to really open up a lot as to what our service can be and what our duties will be for the planet and off the planet, starting, you know, after December 21st as we move into this fifth world. So what I see with what you've been creating and what we've been creating is what I would call the fifth world spiritual warrior, you know?
Yes.
And the Jedi Templar Corps is a way of reviving the true knighthood, the ancient true knighthood, which we've really lost. I mean, most of the Templar organizations or secret societies, they're composed mainly of people that are knight in only in name, but you know certainly not they're not real knights. So we wanted to bring that back. We want the true knighthood to return, and to really bring the true knighthood back means actually, you know, making people the master of the force and using their supernatural or psychic abilities. So I think that it's perfect timing that we came together now, Jim, because we're right on the cusp of the fifth world, and it is time to start creating what I consider to be these fifth world spiritual warriors, global warriors. So,
go planet. That's
go planet. Go planet.
Yeah, and your celebration on the 21st, 2nd, and 23rd, it matches mine in a way because here. Since we're explorers, we're going to model the future. We're going to have 100 people imagine the forest is finished, imagined it's time now to bring love back and filial love and to bring creative beauty back. Beauty and it's peace, plenty, and play around here, and creative play. You know, there's only one guy got a PhD in play in America from all our academic institutions. Can I use the word disgusting? You know, out of touch. You know. Anyway, so we're going to play and love each other, dance and sing, be by the fire, and do esoteric things. And put it all on film. I have three camera teams, and so then I'll munch that together, and I'll send you some. Send me
excellent.
Some event stuff too, and I'll publish it on my means.
Excellent. Well, we'll telepath back and forth at that time, and we'll keep tabs on each other, and enjoy each other's experiences vicariously. Do you, on your website, do you have information about how people can get involved with the First Earth Battalion?
Yeah, that that's the website, neweartharmy.com. And I have 9 websites, but my Facebook is also accessible, Jim Channon, to people who really want to plug in at a deeper level. And I just got to say thanks a lot, Mark, for this opportunity. Aloha to you, and great good luck. I'm fancified by our alliance and buoyed by it.
I think the potential and the possibilities are certainly unlimited. That's for sure. Well, thank you so much for being on, Jim, and I am excited about how our relationship is going to unfold at this point. And I'm sure there's a lot of other people out there that are equally as excited.
Send me the plug for my website on the radio cast, and I'll put it out to my 7,000 people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Will do. Well, I'm sure I'll have you back on eventually at some point, but thanks so much for being on today. And of course, we'll be in touch, Jim.
Go planet.
Go planet. Well, that's our show for today. And I guess in closing, I'd like to mention that our Jiddy Temple Core training is slated to begin the fall of next year, 2013. We currently have a ex-Navy SEALs instructor who will be in teaching the martial arts and survival skills part of the training, while I will be teaching more about the Gnostic part, the spiritual part, about mastering the force and helping activate what we now would call our supernatural abilities. And we will have remote viewing and a lot of other things that were actually have been used within the armed forces. So anyway, we keep looking at our website. We will be putting up a page about the Jedi Templar Corps training as soon as we can come up with a schedule and know exactly when the training will occur. And we will also have applications because we want to make sure we get the right people involved with the training. So there will be applications that you'll be able to download and fill out and submit back to us. So anyway, thank you for joining us today in Guardians of the Holy Grail. We'll be back soon with other interesting guests and exploring some of the ancient and modern mysteries of this planet. So, bye for now.